Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Below the belt.
Episode 178 of Below the Belt. We're 3 pounds over the weight limit. This isn't you know, one of those where you've overslept or you've eaten the wrong meal. You've just fucked the weight, haven't you, Luke? Joined by Luke Williams, who's back after a bit of a hiatus. How are you, sir?
I'm all right, Cal. It is very good to be back. It's been a long time since I chatted shit with you, and I'm looking forward to doing it tonight.
Yeah, man, me too. We're recording pretty late. I'm in my dressing gown. It's a bit of a late one, but it was the only time we could squeeze each other in. It's been quite... Do you remember the last time you was on? Do you remember when that was and what was going on in the world? Or do you not remember at all?
I've got no idea. I honestly think it was maybe about a year ago or even longer. Mm-hmm. And I got no idea. I remember being in this room, and I think Paul was online as well.
But
I don't remember any more than that, mate.
No, I don't either. I think it was definitely was you and Paul. I have no idea what we spoke about, though. I imagine we would have spoke about the new era of the Four Kings. Chocolatito, Cuadras, Estrada.
Yes, might have been around the time of that fight, actually, or one of those fights.
You think perhaps the second Chocolatito Estrada fight?
Maybe? Yeah, it might have been around then, I think.
Yeah, because whenever I see one of those guys fighting, I always think of you, and I always think, Luke's definitely going to have a close eye on this. And it was almost my hope of hopes that Cuadras would get a win back. He'd get one back. And actually, I noticed that, what's his name? The Thai guy that knocked out Chocolatito. I noticed he fought recently.
Rung Vasai,
thank you so much. Yeah. Rung Vasai, he's boxed twice this year. I think he boxed back in August. I think he's up at Super Bantam now. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I had noticed. I haven't seen any of the fights. I think they were quite low profile ones, weren't they? He sort of seems to be treading water a little bit. So it's a shame the way that four way rivalry sort of just fizzled out a little bit the last year or so, hasn't it? But man, it gave us some great fights, and there might still be a couple in the locker to come. You never know.
Well, does Chocolatito, now he's lost the, he lost the rubber match to Estrada, the second match and the third fight were both very, very close. I think the second fight was, Chocolatito should have won that. Does Chocolatito wheel out Rung Vasai? Does he throw a couple of quid his way and try and get that win back?
I would love to see it. And they're both past their best, but I'm sure it would still be a war. It would still be a great fight. So run it back. Let's have it again.
Yeah, It'd have to be Bantam, wouldn't it? Bantam would probably be the fair weight. I don't know what Rung Vasai's at the minute, weight-wise, what he's at. But you'd think maybe they could do it at Bantam. There's probably belts available because Inoue is giving them all up. Yeah, they might even be able to throw one of them in there.
WBC, though, they'd be well up for it.
Well up for it. So it has been a while, Luke, since you've been on. And I thought to myself, sometimes, because I do, you know, full disclosure, I do the Tottenham podcast as well, the Fighting Cock with Flav and all those guys. But obviously, we have a huge kind of squad, and so I'm not on it every week. And sometimes, you know, something will happen in the football, and I'm not on the podcast, and I'll think, oh, I want to talk about this thing, I want to talk about that thing. I don't have that issue with Below the Belt because I just record whenever I want to. Has there been a time that you can think of recently where you've been listening to Below the Belt or you've been watching the boxing at home that you thought, oh, I really want to jump on Below the Belt and talk about this?
Yeah, well, I listen religiously, of course, every single week. I drive to work every morning at about 6 a.m. and it's one of the three or four podcasts, so when it plops in there, I'm always all over it. I've got to be honest with you, Kat, although I've missed chatting to you and Paul and the other guys, it's been one of those periods, and I think we all go through them as boxing fans, where I've just been a little bit out of love with the sport, a little bit frustrated with the sport, a little bit keeping the sport at arm's length at times. I haven't walked away from it, but, you know, there have been some frosty silences between us. You know, we're not in the divorce courts, but we probably need some therapy. Me and boxing, I would say.
So what do you, is there anything in particular you put that down to? Is it, you know, myself, you may have remembered after the Eubank fight, myself and Flav were talking about personalities and characters and perhaps it lacking those kind of characters that we were falling in love with. Is it performance enhancing drugs? Is it your Furies, you know, not, you know, until recently looks like he was ducking Usyk? Is it the big fights bit not being made, or is it a bit of everything?
It's of everything. It's a lot of it is not wanting to hear any more shit come out of Tyson Fury's mouth, I'll admit to you, because that's got very tiresome. The personalities thing, in fact, I remember the fight I would love to have spoken about, and I remember texting you, what was the Eubank Smith rematch, because you and me share some junior love between us. And I think you were so you'd recorded something, I think, within hours of the final bout. So I was going to text you the next day, oh, I'll do a pod about this. You'd already done it. Because that was very exciting, because I got a lot of time for Junior, and to see him come back when he'd been pretty much written him off, to be honest. I didn't think he had a prayer in the rematch. That was pretty thrilling. That got me jumping up and down for the first time in a few months. That got me excited about boxing again.
No, me too. There has been this kind of void for me in terms of people. When I'm watching a big fight and I'm invested in one particular boxer and I'm sitting there watching the fight and the fight's about to start, I physically start to shake. I don't know how you feel when you're, but I get, it's like shivers. It's almost like shivers. I sit there and I am upright and I'm shivering, like I can feel it. Yeah. It was certain fighters I get like that. George Groves, even Wilder. I love Wilder. Obviously Floyd and Chris Eubank Jr. And the rematch was the first time in a while where I'd had that, the shivers. Because I'm invested in him as a personality. I've seen, obviously been to see him box live 5-6 times. And I really enjoy him as a personality. I think he's so different to everybody else. What is it you like about Junior?
Well, I was always a big Senior fan. He was one of the boxers that got me excited, you know, growing up. I loved his eccentricity. I loved how different he was. He didn't conform to any of the stereotypes, you know, he wasn't a lovable pug. He wasn't a Nigel Benn street thug type, you know. He was completely different, completely unique. Everyone seemed to hate him. When I was at school, I was the only one that ever wanted Eubank to win. And the Ben fight and the second Watson fight were two just electric occasions where I had that feeling you're talking about, the shivers, the feeling in the pit of your stomach that you get when you're really invested in a fight. And that's a feeling, you know, I love so many different sports. I never get quite that same physical reaction, that same nervousness from anything else. I don't know if you do with Tottenham, because I know how invested you are in Tottenham. I'm not quite that invested in a football team the way that you are. But no other sport, even sports I've been fanatical about, have given me that physical sensation of absolute dread, fear, and then sometimes, frequently not, frequently disappointment, but then elation, you know, at the end of it. Nothing beats it for me in sport. I might have just fallen back in love with boxing again, talking to you, Carol.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. And actually, it's funny because I don't know if Spurs was my first love. I think probably wrestling was my first love, to be honest. Watching Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, you know, doing that whole bit when I was 7, 8 years old. It was then, and then it was Spurs, but Spurs ended up overtaking it. But the difference kind of between boxing when you're invested in a fighter and you're invested in a football team is, with a football team, there's always next season.
Yeah.
There's always next season. New players. You know, these boxers can't regen. They can't be rebuilt. Once they're shot, they're shot. That's it. And you know, seeing George Groves get stopped by Callum Smith, that I knew that was it. That was him done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really hard to take to when you're so invested in a fighter, to see them lose and lose in a manner like that, when you know it's done for them.
Mm-hmm.
There is no next season. There mm-hmm. is no regen. There's no coming back. So that's the thing, and you know, I can say as a Spurs fan, as we record, Spurs are top of the league, whereas last year they were terrible. There's always next season. Mm-hmm. There isn't that with boxing. There is no next season. Yeah.
I guess as well, yeah. Ultimately in boxing, part of that fear that I get in the pit of my stomach is that the ultimate tragedy might happen, that it is a live and present danger in the way it isn't really in any other sport. And again, the second Watson-Eubank fight, I remember, massive Eubank fan, you know, when he knocked Watson out, I'm leaping up and down, I'm running around the house. And then the next day, when I know what's happened to Watson, I felt sick that I'd reacted in that way. So that must be part of it, mustn't it? That in the pit of our stomach is that sort of fear that the ultimate tragedy might actually happen.
Yeah, the stakes are so high. Like it is very much the worst that could happen can happen every time they get into the ring. So there's nothing. So obviously Eubank kind of got your juices going again, but there wasn't really anything else. Not really anything else that's leapt out at you the last few months where you was like, I don't know, oh, I'd really like to have spoken about that. Or Callum, you were full of shit. Was there anything in the last few months?
I'm a big admirer of Usyk. I quite enjoyed Usyk Dubois, and I enjoyed watching people absolutely lose their shit over the controversy, in inverted commas, of that. But yeah, it's really been it. I found it a bit of a wilderness, you know, that we've had some things like Canelo Charlo that I was quite looking forward to that were just then a damp squib. And I just feel the year's been petering out a little bit, really. And there's not been much to get my teeth into.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been difficult this year. It's Inoue. I suppose Inoue has been the guy that's kind of kept us ticking along, hasn't he? He's fighting at the absolute top level every single time. It looks like his next fight is going to be against Topalez for the undisputed super bantamweight title. He just keeps delivering again and again, and he's on at a reasonable hour, you know, to sit there on a Tuesday lunchtime, so random. I remember being sat there on the train on the Met line watching the first and air fight. Like, you know, jumping up and down and, you know, on the train in public. But there's not many fighters like him that it's guaranteed excitement, isn't it? Except for when Paul Butler was in the ring.
Yeah. And yeah, I did enjoy the Inoue fight, and he's remarkable. And I'd love him to be fighting a little bit more. I'd love him to go back to America. I'd love him to get that proper sort of mainstream recognition that I feel he doesn't quite have. And maybe someone like Terence Crawford now has sort of got through the Spence fight, which again was another bit of a disappointment in a way. I was happy for Crawford, but it was such a masterclass and it was so one-sided. It wasn't really the fight that I felt we were going to get at one point.
Yeah, I remember, I think I did the preview with Sean Brown. I think it was the the week before, and I said, I think we both kind of agreed with each other that that it wasn't, no one was going to get blasted out of there. It wasn't going to be one-sided. We both felt it was going to be nip and tuck and maybe a bullshit decision one way or the other, or a close or something close. And it just, I agree, it ended up being really disappointing. By no fault of Crawford's at all. He went out and delivered, you know, in a situation like that where, you know, I was talking to Craig last about this last week. When you want a fighter to be serious business, Terence Crawford was serious business, and he got down to business and he won the fight. But yeah, Spence just, I don't know if it was weight, I don't know if it was too many wars. He just wasn't at it at all. He looked like a shadow of what we had seen in the past. He looked like he was done, to be honest. Just because he couldn't, the thing, what for him to get dropped off a jab, it was just like, this is a guy that's been through tough fights. This is a guy that doesn't get dropped off a jab. And Crawford's a decent puncher, but he's not, you know, a Golovkin puncher. I like that Golovkin's always a
the Golovkin scale.
So we all say it, don't we? Yeah, yeah. It's like the Golovkin scale. We all say it. Oh, he's a puncher, but he's not a Golovkin puncher. He's not a Wilder puncher, but it's a Golovkin. You always say, I don't know about you, but I always say it. I always say, well, he's a puncher, but he's not a Golovkin puncher. That fudding kind of every shot hurts, you know. But you're right. You're right. It's been a little bit, but you know, in football, there's always next season, and in boxing, there's always next year. You never know what next year is going to bring.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
But you're back writing again, Luke. Did you have a break from writing? Has there been a break? Or have you been?
Yeah, I do. I quite regularly do. There's a couple of local community newspapers I do quite a lot of sort of local stuff for, and that does occasionally, that's boxing involved, but more often it's local interviews, writers, theatre actors, all sorts of different things, news stories, that sort of stuff. So I keep ticking over. But yeah, I've been a little bit away from the boxing writing. But yeah, I've got a piece coming up in Boxing News in the next couple of weeks. It's the second time I've done something for them, which I'm excited about. So that's been fun to dip my toe back into the boxing writing. Yeah.
Do you need, you said you do some local stuff. Do you need to do that to keep the pen sharp? Could you put it down for like a year, 18 months, and then pick it back up again? Or do you have
I need to do it to keep the bills paid is the main. Yeah, it does keep me sharp. I find, you know, when I'm in practice, I can actually write quite quickly. I started out my earliest journalism stuff. I used to do minute by minute reports for UEFA.com. So, you know, you're having to write a comment every minute on what's going on in the match. So that's how I sort of cut my teeth. And as a consequence of that, I can write quite quickly. So I can turn copy round fairly rapidly. But that is something that you lose if you're not doing it fairly regularly. So yeah, the more you write, certainly for me, the quicker I can turn a feature around. So yeah, it's about saying match sharp, I guess, you know, pen sharp, if that would be an expression, I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you find as well that, what I always say to people, if they want to start out and get into writing around boxing, I always say, make sure you read a lot. Don't just write a lot. Make sure you read a lot. Because you see how people structure their pieces. You see the kind of wording they use. and you just see how things are supposed to be done. When you read the best in the business, I think that helps you. If you're if there's anyone listening that's kind of getting, wants to get started and wants to write, I always think that's a good piece of advice, is to read the best as well as write.
Yeah, definitely. And this is what I'm always, as a teacher, this is what I'm always trying to tell the kids that I teach, you know, because in the GCSE English, you've got two pieces of writing that count half, 50% of your GCSE in English language. And they're always, I know, how can I get more marks? And I always say, the more you read, the more that will pay off in your own writing, whether it's the vocabulary or the style or the sentence style. And that's something I always did as a kid. I was a big reader. My dad was a big reader. And I think that's where my sort of facility to write fairly quickly and smoothly sort of came from through the reading. And yeah, absolutely, that's the best advice to give anyone, is just read as much as possible, because you just your brain absorbs it like a sponge, even if you don't realize it.
Yeah. I was always a big reader as well. Wasn't much of a writer, but always enjoyed reading. Still do now. And I think it's good if you want to. You subconsciously will pick up stuff, I think, from reading, whether it's books, magazines, newspapers, whatever. It's funny, when I was a kid, my stepdad used to buy a Daily Sport, which Paul Zannon was a part of at the time. But I wasn't allowed to look at the front. I was only allowed to look at the sports bit. I've only just
Is it still going?
So I would just sit
the sport, is it still going?
I don't know. I think so. I think a lot of this stuff's made up.
Now, I think it was always made up.
Quite tongue-in-cheek. Yeah. Do you know what? My overriding memory of the Daily Sport was, I don't know why we're talking about it, but we are now, was when 9/11 happened, they had 9/11 on the cover. And it was proper news, and they, you know, I didn't really see it, but I just remember seeing in the news agents, all the newspapers, and the Daily Sport had 9/11. I don't know why I'm laughing about 9/11. I'm not. But then the next day, all the papers still had 9/11 stuff, except for the Daily Sport. They went back to normal, and they had Lorraine Kelly with her baps out on the
front. Lorraine Kelly.
Lorraine Kelly. Oh God, and I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it. I remember thinking, oh my God, the Daily Sport have done proper news. And the next day it's like, oh, there they are, back to normal. It's Black History Month, which it's a good time. I always enjoy this time of year because it's something I'm really interested in for a variety of reasons. And people that listen to the podcast will hear me time to time talk about stuff in regards to Black history. And people may remember recently I was talking about Claressa Shields, and I described her as incredibly pro-Black. And it's because she puts Black people first. She wants Black people to win. That doesn't mean she's anti any other race. It just means she wants Black people to win. So I do talk about this stuff from time to time. It's something I'm always interested in. But your piece for Boxing News, Luke, has a Black history.
Yeah, so what I've tried to do in this piece, I'm not a massive fan of like top tens and countdowns and that type of thing, but it is a sort of piece in that ilk where I've tried to pick the 25 most significant Black boxers from boxing history. And I've not put them in an order of priority or greatness or anything like that. It's chronological. So there's some value I've attached to what they've done, and there's people I've had to omit and people I've included, et cetera, et cetera. It's not meant as a definitive list. It's my own personal viewpoint, and it's very much slanted towards the historical and cultural angle. So it's not the 25 greatest pound for pound Black boxers ever or anything like that. It's more the people who I think have had the most impact, not only on boxing, but in a wider sense, culturally and historically. So yeah, that's the sort of idea behind it.
I could see that from looking at the list. I could see, okay, there's not one theme here. It wasn't, it's like you say, it's not like a top 25. And what I'm quite conscious of, because lists is the sort of thing that it gets, it's almost clickbaity, isn't it? Sometimes it can be, it gets people reacting. It can be top 10 TV shows. And if the Sopranos and The Wire aren't in the top three, people are throwing their laptop across the room. Or whatever, if it's top boxers or rappers or whatever. It's the sort of thing that, that gets people to react. But I can see from this list it's very, very different. Sorry. It's very different. What was you thinking about? What made you want to write it?
One of the reasons that I got into boxing in the first place is because of my love of history as well as sport, and the fact that boxing is a sport that has so many, firstly, such a long history, longer history than organized football leagues, or longer history than any other sport, pretty much apart from horse racing. Boxers back in the Georgian era, they were the first celebrities, and I love that historical aspect of the sport. And also the way that for many years it was such a outlet for people from disadvantaged backgrounds, whether that might be socially, economically, or ethnically, to make their mark. That there was an element of meritocracy at work that maybe didn't exist in wider society, but did exist within boxing. So you're able to get these, significant, heroic, well-known figures from Jewish minority groups like Daniel Mendoza early in the bare knuckle days, black minority groups like Bill Richmond and Tom Molyneux in the early days as well. So that's one of the things that makes boxing so fascinating and so unique, is that it has produced these figures of sort of social significance, these pioneers, these trailblazers, to a greater extent, I think, than most other sports.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's pretty much the only sport that you could take, someone like a Jack Johnson, whose parents would have been slaves, and this guy ends up becoming, and Bill Richmond as well, end up becoming, Jack Johnson in particular, one of the most famous people in the world, not just a famous fighter. He's not, an Alexander Usyk type who's known by boxing fans. Jack Johnson was seen as the premier athlete in the world, and the first, black man to be the heavyweight champion in the world. I know Bill Richmond is a topic that has a close affection for you. You wrote the book about Bill Richmond, literally. was he kind of?
Yeah,
the first
he had
name
to be.
The list?
And that was the sort of, when I was researching that book, I came across all these other figures from boxing history. And that's what sort of also gave me the idea for this piece as well. People that I couldn't include in the book because I couldn't write the whole history of black boxers or whatever. So yeah, he's the sort of jumping off part at the beginning because he was the original. He was the first to make a wider impact. There are accounts of other black boxers, pre him, but often not given names. They didn't achieve any sort of level of celebrity in the way that he did. So yeah, he comes first on the list chronologically, and then I work forward from there. And I mean, one thing that I found quite interesting compiling the list, and this wasn't a sort of intention from the beginning, but there ended up being very few modern fighters sort of on the list. I think there's only four who were born post-World War II. And I guess there's sort of two main reasons for that. One would be that I think it sort of shows that boxing itself has sort of receded in importance since the war. It's not like the cultural touchstone that it once was, in the days of Ali, in the days of Johnson, in the days of Joe Louis. And also another reason is, thankfully, a good reason, that, the cause of equality and civil rights has advanced. And in a sense, therefore, when we talk about, we don't really talk about black boxers today, we talk about boxers, for the most part, which is a good thing. So there's less opportunity almost for some of these people to make a wider social impact, because hopefully that the wider society has changed enough that that people within sports aren't having to change it so much in the way that they maybe did in the past. So that sort of accounts for the lack of modern fighters, although there are a couple in there.
Yeah, and it's interesting because there's been like these kind of, I think you've got Jack Johnson and then you've got Muhammad Ali, and in between there you've got Joe Louis. And I always compare Joe Louis to Anthony Joshua. Not so much now, but after Jack Johnson, Joe Louis came along, and people didn't want another black heavyweight in America, didn't want another black heavyweight champion like Jack Johnson, did they? They didn't want someone that was dating white women, that was flaunting their wealth, that was flaunting, you know, how promiscuous he was and everything else. And so, am I right? Joe Louis was told not to smile after winning. He was not to smile after winning fights because he didn't want to be seen as arrogant, right? And I think they're three very interesting points in time for me. Jack Johnson, Joe Louis, and then Muhammad Ali, because you've got, it's like the up, you've got the up and then the down and then the up again, you know, it's like it's been these peaks and troughs in terms of characters and personalities. And all three of those are in the, they're all in the piece.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, if you're talking about the history of the heavyweight division in the 20th century, those three, you know, stand tall, don't they? And yeah, you're completely right. It was said that he was told never to smile after knocking out a white fighter and all of these sort of things. He was, you know, I think his handlers had learned some lessons from the way that Jack Johnson had ended up being treated and regarded, and were anxious for Joe to sort of avoid those pitfalls, in public at least. I think in private, Joe was pretty promiscuous from what I've read, but it was all much more stage managed and media controlled. But in a way, that's one of the things I love about Jack Johnson, is that he was so unapologetic about who he was and how he was going to live his life. And he refused. I mean, there's a quote in the piece from him. I can't quite remember it, but it's something along the lines of, he once said, "I basically behave as though color doesn't exist, as prejudice doesn't exist. I just live my life." So to live a life in America at that time, free of any convention or, you know, whether it be any moral or legal convention, just to completely do what he wanted to do, the whole time, what confidence, what a remarkable man. And I think I'm astonished there's never been, you know, a film, there's a great documentary film, but a dramatic film about Jack Johnson, I just think, yes. Or a mini series, HBO drama series about Jack Johnson would be phenomenal, because his name sadly has fallen out. You know, most people in the street wouldn't be able to name Jack Johnson or know exactly who he was. And he should be there alongside Ali, really, I think, in terms of public recognition, because he was a remarkable man, remarkable man.
Yeah, to be born in 1878, so 13 years after the Civil War, when slavery was abolished. What a time to be born. He would have, his parents, even if they weren't slaves themselves, would have been alive in that time when black people were enslaved. Such a fascinating character. And it's one of the things he always used to say, "I'm not a slave, I am a free man." One of my favorite stories about him is when, back then, not a lot of people had cars, but he used to drive flash cars. And one time he is flying down the road in his car and the policeman stops him, pulls him over, says, "You can't drive like that. You can't drive like that. I've got to fine you $50. So Jack Johnson whips out a $100 bill, and a $100 bill back then was a lot of money.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Stuck it in his hand, and he goes, "Well, I can't change." The policeman says, "I can't change this. I can't change 100.
Brilliant story.
I'm coming back the same way I came. Basically, I'm going to fly straight back down here at the same speed." Yeah. What a guy. Great. Unforgivable Blackness is the book that's written about him, and the documentary of the same name by Ken Burns, who's like my favorite documentary maker. He's one of my favorite historical fighters to talk about. I talk about him quite a lot on the podcast. I saw Ray Robinson's in it as well. I've read a book about Ray Robinson. And Battling Siki, I've read a book about Battling Siki as well. What was it about Ray Robinson? Obviously, he's a fantastic fighter. But what was it in terms of outside?
Prototypes, if you like, for the sort of modern-day flamboyant sports star. You know, he had his pink Cadillac, he had his nightclub, all of those sort of things. So we're now getting into a sort of a more modern era where black boxers are very much more accepted. You know, Joe Louis have since made the breakthrough there, didn't he, that it was acceptable for a black boxer to be heroic. Sugar Ray Robinson carries on that tradition, but adds a bit of flamboyance to it, you know, a bit of media savvy. He also you know, some people credit him with inventing the entourage. I don't know if that's completely true, but he had an incredible entourage, including a barber, a midget, a golf professional, and all these sorts of things. So, yeah, his flamboyance, I thought, definitely merited a spot. Plus the fact, you know, pretty much everybody would agree he is the greatest pound for pound boxer of all time. So, yeah, he had to be in there, Sugar Ray.
And a lot of his welterweight fights, which a lot of people would argue is prime, there's not a lot of footage of, is there? It's more the middleweight, and, you know, obviously he went to light heavy as well.
Got close, but didn't do it.
He went to light heavy, but he didn't win the title there. Am I right? He got close. The heat got to him, didn't he? It was 13th round, Joe Maxim, he got stopped in the 13th round because of the heat. And then thinking about, I don't want to spoil that, I don't want to talk about every single person in it because I want people to read it. Just getting to the more modern, you've got Mike Tyson's in there, Floyd Mayweather's in there, and Clarissa Shields are in there. What about those three?
I think in a way, I think Tyson was probably the last properly global boxing star that there was before the sport. I think I say in the article, sort of retreated into the sort of cul-de-sac of pay-per-view. You know, Tyson, I think unless you were around when he was around at his peak, I don't think people quite appreciate how massive a name he was, how everybody knew who he was. So in a way, he was the last great superstar of boxing, really. Mayweather, obviously, I knew I had to try and promote the article on this podcast, and you wouldn't let me on if he wasn't in the list. So he's there. But also, really, I would say for the business acumen, you know, the greatest businessman that boxing has ever seen, the canniest, the savviest, you know, I think that's worthy of a mention. Clarissa Shields, I really agonize about. Sort of felt, you know, the rise of women's boxing is significant enough that it should be represented. And she's the obvious choice for it. But that was one choice that I feel, you know, in 20 or 30 years' time, we'll have to see how it unfolds. She's got a lot of potential, but she's not quite crossed over yet.
Yeah, she's in an interesting place, isn't she? Because she's clearly a fantastic fighter. The Marshall fight was entertaining. I thought she won handily. I remember watching Savannah Marshall and I thinking she's frozen. The first two rounds she was like she completely froze. And if Shields was more of a puncher, she'd have got her out of there. But she's a fantastic fighter. She's a fantastic personality. Her story is so sad, but yet to see what she's gone on to achieve, the issue she has that the men's fighters don't have is that the rest of the women's sport is just not at her level. So she's been to light heavy and won belt. She's been at super middle. She's a back at middle. Like, she has done everything, but what she doesn't have is a great rivalry. She doesn't have that. You said you agonized over Clarissa Shields. Was there anybody?
You know, I guess that some of the people I feel bad about leaving out are some of the great sort of pure boxing talents. People like Roy Jones, people like Marvin Hagler, Thomas Hearn, you know, these great boxers, but people that I felt didn't have that maybe extra dimension in terms of the social or cultural impact, you know, that they'd had, that others had done more or done something first, you know, quite a lot, you know, the first black welterweight world champion is in there, the first black world middleweight champion is in there, you know, people that got there first, achieved something before anybody else, so had an advantage, I guess, in this list. So, yeah, I feel a bit bad about that, you know. There's numerous heavyweights. You know, Joe Frazier could have been in there, really, couldn't he? George Foreman, Sonny Liston. But then it would just end up being a heavyweight list. And I wanted to give other weight classes and other, you know, I wanted to shine a light on some of the maybe the lesser known stories. So someone like Ike Williams, who, you know, took the stand and testified against mob involvement in boxing, which is something a lot of people sort of maybe forgotten about, and I thought was a very brave stance to take. People like that, I wanted to maybe shine a light on and get them in there rather than the names everyone's maybe familiar with.
And actually, yeah, that makes absolute sense. And Ray Leonard's in there as well. him and Floyd are the ones that stand out. And Lennox Lewis, actually. I know Lennox Lewis isn't on the list. But they're three modern fighters who all got out with their faculties and all got out with all their money. And actually, when you look at that list, other than Crystal Shields, they're pretty much the only ones. There's very few fighters, particularly black fighters, that will get out with all their faculties and all their money. And so I think I completely understand why Ray Leonard was in there as well, because he wasn't you know, a social justice warrior, for lack of a better term. He wasn't really one talking about civil rights or, you know, black rights.
Yeah.
But in terms of black fighters getting ahead and saving their money.
Yeah, and I think Mayweather must have learned a lot from Leonard. And in a way, Mayweather took what Leonard had done and took it a stage further and almost perfected it at the expense possibly of giving us the great fights that Leonard did. Sorry, Cal, you look riled.
And actually, I think, it's fine. You know, seeing Charlo last week and the performance he put in, I don't think Floyd meant to do it, but I think a lot of fighters look at him and they see the O and they see the money, and they've misunderstand him. I think he's very misunderstood by a lot of guys like Charlo, Danny Garcia, Keith Thurman, all of that. All the PBC guys, basically, that he's helped build this empire. But what's happened is a lot of guys are happy to just take easier fights now. But what they're forgetting is what Floyd did. They're forgetting who he's beat. I remember he beat Manny Pacquiao. He beat Cotto, then he beat Manny Pacquiao. And he said after the Manny Pacquiao fight, he goes, Manny Pacquiao, his words were, that was the last of the Mohicans. I've done it. I've done everything. Spence, Charlo, all these guys that he's helped pave the way for, they're not going to be able to say that. Even Crawford, they're not going to be able to say, I cleared up, I beat the last of the Mohicans, I beat everybody. It's a shame. I don't think he meant to do it at all. You know, I think he wanted people to make money, and I think he wanted people to get out with their faculties, but he wanted people to have a legacy. He's got the legacy, but I think...
I would agree with that take. I'd say the other thing that, rightly or wrongly, in some people's eyes, damages Mayweather's legacy is that the Pacquiao fight happened when it did. I think had that fight happened earlier, there'd be less dispute and less carping about what he did. But yeah, I agree with your take on it.
I get you. Yeah, I get you. It should have happened sooner. But, you know, Pacquiao didn't want to take the drugs test. You know, what can you do? You know, I have this article saved on my phone, Luke, where Freddie Roach admits that they pulled out of the negotiations for the Mayweather fight.
Because I bet you whip that out at parties, don't you?
Freddie Roach admits it, that they didn't. I've got it saved on my phone because I do. I miss it. I miss it very much. I miss arguing with Pacquiao fans on the internet. I really miss it. So sometimes on Reddit, you'll see the conversation start, and I'll just put the link on there. He pulled out the fight. The fight should have happened sooner. You're absolutely right, but... You know, Floyd's 2 years older than Pacquiao, so it's not like he waited for him to get old. Anyway,
It's either next week or the week after. I'm not exactly sure.
This week's.
It would be embarrassing if they didn't run it now, wouldn't it? After I've talked to them. Okay. I think they're running it.
I know. Well, we'll have to. Well, what we'll do is, I hope they do. Otherwise, we'll speak to Craig and we'll get Craig to put it on Boxing Zombie. Yeah. We'll copy and paste it, put it on Coffee Boxing Zombie, because the people do have to see it now. Well, it needs to come out in October. It's Black History Month, has to come out.
Yes.
Okay, absolutely. Should we talk about Wooden Warriors?
I fell asleep.
Did you enjoy it?
Before it started. Yeah, I was lying in bed, sort of with my headphones in. All ready to go, and sort of woke up with the headphones still playing at about 3 a.m.
Right.
I did catch up with it the next day, and it was a great fight, actually. It was an exciting fight. I enjoyed it.
Okay, good.
And I didn't see the controversy about this. I think there was a fair stoppage.
I agree. I thought it was absolutely fine. I was watching it on my phone because I'd been out. I'd been out for an early birthday dinner. And so I was watching it on my phone. And on DAZN, it does this thing called pin protection, and it kept popping up. And I'd finally realised how to get rid of it eventually. So, and as I was doing that, the shot landed. It was when the shot landed, so I saw the effects of the shot.
I mean, he was facing the wrong fucking way most of the time.
I knew he was, Warrington looked completely done, and he's got his back turned. He's like, he's stumbling all over the place and then gets back to his corner. He looks completely done, and then he faces the ref. And the ref,
so hang on, so when you were watching, you were at your birthday dinner, and he's watching it under the table.
But before...
Oh, okay. You wrapped it up early, didn't you? So you could go home and watch the sort of thing I do.
So I just got back, so I'd... Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. No, I'm at an age now where... I want to be home early anyway, but yes, it was. I wanted to get home and watch the fight, but I had it on my, the phone. I was watching it on the phone in the Uber on the way back, and I saw most of it, and I plonked it on a little stand, and I was watching all of it, but I just missed the shot landing, but heard the commentator, and then saw Warrington's reaction. It was a short little right hand from Wood, and that's what done the job. I actually thought before then, though, Warrington looked pretty good.
He looked the best I've seen him in a while.
That was on the way out.
He was,
but he actually boxed pretty
well. He was pretty much dominating, really. He was controlling it. Wood looked like he was pretty much done almost. So it was. But Wood's a great finisher, and he does have Golovkin style power almost. Nearly. So he's always dangerous. But yeah, it was a really good...
Calm down.
A really good scrap. You know what? Back in the day, that would have been a really good British title fight, wouldn't it? And really, that's what it still is, really. I'm just not sold on the WBA, and the proliferation of title belts. So for me, that decided who the best featherweight in Britain was. But Lee Wood's probably going to move up in weight now. And maybe he can fight for the British super featherweight title against Joe Cordina.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, it's a real. It looks like that's what they're going to do. You know, it seemed like Joe Cordina wanted to unify. Foster over in America. They was looking at him. There's Navarrete. I think so. Super Fever. And it looks like he's just going to be kept in house. He's going to fight Lee Wood, and he's going to fight Zelfa Barrett. And it's this kind of British round robin of fringe world level super feathers. It's a little disappointing, really. How do you feel? You know, Lee Wood, he obviously didn't look great, but he's moving up in weight.
Probably make Cordina a favourite there. I think I'm not sure. I think Wood might be in that funny position where he's sort of a little bit too big for the weight he's at, but maybe not big enough at super featherweight. I don't know. He's 35. Before he found that finish, he was looking a bit done. How much of that was making of the weight, I don't know. So I'd probably favour Cordina in that. But Wood is obviously an expert in proving everybody wrong, isn't he? And pulling it out of the fire. Yeah.
He kept switching.
Pretty sure
stuff.
He is, yeah.
Is Lee Wood a southpaw?
I think he's southpaw.
Because he boxed southpaw for the bulk of that fight. I had it in my head he was an orthodox fighter. Yeah. Because he was switching. Right. Yeah, he was switching a lot on the night. And the southpaw, it wasn't working. And I can't remember what stance he was in when he landed the shot. I don't think it matters. They were trading, weren't they? I don't think the stance really mattered. But I agree with you, and I just can't see... how 4 pounds is going to make that much difference. It's one of the smaller weight jumps, isn't it? It's at that kind of weight class where 4 pounds at between bantam and super bantam is a lot, but you jump up a little bit and I don't think it matters as much. I don't think it's going to make that much difference against a guy like Cordina, who boxed for a long time at lightweight, didn't he? And then he's at super feather, and yeah, I don't think so.
Really. I mean, I'm sure there's fights out there for him. They can bring him back again. He looked decent in the rounds that he finished, but if he's made his money, I'd like to see him call it a day. Really, I think he'll be desperate for the Wood rematch, and he's desperate for the rematch. But I don't think that's going to happen. unless he's willing to move up in weight as well. And I don't think Josh Warrington's a super featherweight. So we'll see. But Warrington, he's given us a good run, good value for money, you know. But again, I mean, I was listening. Ben Davison was interviewed after the fight. I think he said that Lee Wood should now be considered one of the 10 greatest British fighters of all time.
Yeah. Sorry, everybody. I'm just holding my head. Ben Davison's... I quite like him. He's quite quirky. And I actually think he's a much better trainer than people give him credit for. He's generally, his wins and losses, he's generally on the upright. But they are very... They're very... That whole camp is... It's almost what you call self-masturbation. It's constantly just, oh, look how fucking great we are. We're so fucking wonderful. Even like Lee Wiley. I like Lee Wiley. I enjoy his videos. But he will post about, oh, look what Lee Wood did at the weekend. It's like, mate, you're just wanking yourself off. Like, you're just talking about yourself. Like, and that's the thing. They're all fucking egomaniacs in that gym, it seems like. But I like them. They're different.
You get another line that you'll like, Cal. I think Steve Bunce said that one day they'll make the Lee Wood story into a film. And he said to Ben Davison, so who would play you in that film, Ben? Yeah. So who do you think Ben Davison went for? David Beckham.
Ricky Gervais. Who was it? Oh my God. I don't know which one of them two would be a worse actor. I don't know who could play who worse, to be honest. I was watching that David Beckham thing yesterday. The amount of work that guy's had done on his face, Jesus. God. No. Yeah, I don't know which one of them would do a worse job, to be honest. Yeah, but it was a good fight. We'll see. We'll see what Warrington. I think Warrington will come back. He looked pretty gone on the scales, so you know, maybe he does try and do super feather. Or you know, now Lee Wood's gone up, he goes, oh well, I can have a crack at the WBA featherweight belt, and he can maybe try and get another shot of that. But if he comes up against actually the guy, Lee Wood was supposed to be fighting a really naughty mandatory for that belt. So if Warrington has to fight him, he's got no chance. So we'll see. We shall see. Maybe he'll be able to, navigate into that Joe Cordina, Zelfa Barrett space of, you know, that kind of round robin of, I wouldn't call them four kings, call them four something. And yeah, you'd go from there. And next weekend, it's not this weekend, next weekend. It's Dan Aziz and Joshua Boazzi. Does that fight do anything for you? Are you looking forward to it? A couple of South London guys. They was outside the Arsenal Stadium yesterday. I thought that's apt, you know, to be outside the Arsenal Stadium of South London fighters.
Yeah, that fight does a lot for me. I'm a big fan of Dan Aziz. You know, I don't think I've ever met anyone who doesn't like Dan Aziz because he does things the right way. He's old school, etc., etc. I interviewed him a few years back. I think when he was about 2-0 for my Lewisham paper because he's from Lewisham. Really nice guy, bright guy, university graduate. Great attitude. Right. Will Boazzi have a bit too much class and seasoning for him? You'd probably think so. But there's so many question marks about Boazzi. So I think it's a really intriguing fight. And the first time in my life, I've been offered a corporate ticket. And I can't go. Can't go. I'm away. It's half term. And I'm already visiting friends up north. So had to turn it down.
Oh, gutted.
It was one of those offers from someone I know a bit that if I offered it on someone else, it would just look cheeky. Sorry, Kel. But I was gutted. I was gutted.
Right. Fair enough. Fair enough. I would have gone to that. Yeah. No. That.
I'm not sure. Actually, I'm not sure. I imagine it'll probably just be lower. I would have thought.
Just lower tier,
I don't know if it's gonna. It's not gonna sell out, is it? It's a. You know, it's a trade fight. And neither of them has a massive following. So I think it would just be the lower.
No. How do you feel about kind of the British boxing landscape right now? Because you've got Matchroom that are on the app, right? They're on DAZN. I think they're probably in a place with Frank Warren that can put on big events. They've got Anthony Joshua. They can put on big, big events. You've obviously got Queensbury. They've got Tyson Fury. They've got ties in with Zhang. They've got ties in with Usyk. And they've obviously got Anthony Yard as well. And then you've got Boxer. Mm. And they're kind of... They've signed a lot of B-plus players, I call them. They're kind of like B... They're, none of them are stars. None of them you'd put on pay-per-view. Maybe Eubank, but Eubank's not really their fighter. He's a Sauerland fighter.
Yeah.
How do you kind of look at the boxing landscape in Britain right now? It seems
Yeah, and I think also if you look at, you know, who the biggest stars in British boxing are, they're all sort of mid to late 30s probably now, aren't they? You know, your Joshua's, your Furies, they're getting on. Where's the young, you know, 20 to 25-year-olds, I think, is the worry. Plus, we're still not getting the leading guys working together and making some of the bigger fights that could be made. So I think it's a bit of a concerning time. I think we had a few pretty good years, pretty high-profile years, but I think, and this sort of goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning, about sort of falling out of love with boxing. I seem to remember, I think it was sort of post-Nassim Hamed, your sort of 2001 to 2005 type time. I had a similar, I sort of moved away from boxing, but I remember getting rid of a load of all my old boxing magazines and just sort of feeling there wasn't much going on in the sport, which I regret now. And I sort of feel we might be in for a bit of a lull again in the next few years, which is concerning.
Yeah, do you know what? I didn't think about that. You know, you think about, you know, Joshua's, what, 33, 34.
It's Eubank, 33, 34.
You just mentioned Lee Wood, one of our world champions, 34, 35. Chris Eubank's, it's 33, 34. Yeah. There's not a lot. Even, you know, we're talking about Buatsi fighting. He's in his 30s, early 30s, I think. You know, there's not a lot of guys, young guys, that are like, oh, that's the next guy, you know. And I think that speaks to, and that's always been my theory as to why Eddie Hearn's pushed this Conor Benn thing so much, because he's watched since COVID and since lockdown a lot of his fighters lose fights. A lot of world champions lose their belts. We went from, I remember when we first started, one of the first few episodes recording the podcast, Britain had 13 world champions. I think we've probably got a handful now. And that's because we see more unification than we used to. You know, we didn't have an undisputed champion for a long time. We had Bernard Hopkins, Jermaine Taylor with the middleweight titles, and then there was a long gap until Terence Crawford unified the junior welterweight division. But there is an issue, definitely, with British boxing, where we're not... A lot of our guys are fighting kind of soft competition, and then they're going to fight someone they're not prepared for. I think as well, we've obviously got the YouTube fighters, the influencer kind of boxing as well. These guys are able to promote their personalities and are able to make good money. And that's what makes me think, you can see why Eddie Hearn is really trying to push this Conor Benn thing. And that speaks to why Conor Benn isn't talking about, I want to fight Boots Ennis. I want to fight Crawford. He's saying, I want to fight Chris Eubank. He wants to fight, you know, Kell Brook. He wants money fights. Chris Eubank's the same. They want money fights. They see what the YouTubers are doing. They see what Floyd's done with the silly exhibitions and all of that. Again, they're misunderstanding the legacy. They're misunderstanding the message. They're seeing the end result. They're not seeing the whole journey that these guys have done to get there. And it's really is. You're right. I think we could be.
What do you think of Adam Azim?
Basketball rings in the background, leisure centres putting on shows and stuff like that, you know? It's a concern, isn't it? I like him. He's a good fighter. He's nowhere near ready. For a world title, I mean. But, you know, 140, it should be wide open, really. You know, Josh Taylor's gone up. He's vacated the belts. Crawford's left it behind. There's no big stars there. Devin Haney's about to move up, and he's about to fight. Who's he fighting? I've forgotten who he's fighting, but he's going to fight for the world title. Yes, Progre, thank you.
Yeah, I think there's promise there. I mean,
isn't it at 140?
I do like the way the McGuigans are pretty good at picking the right fight and actually progressing someone through the levels rather than have them fight dog shit and then fight for a world title and come up short. So I think in that respect, he's in good hands. But I don't... For me, it feels like there's something missing, but I'm not quite sure what. But I'd hope to be proved wrong.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about the McGuigans. That was that video that Carl Frampton was on. Did you see the interview, the IFL interview with Carl Frampton?
Yeah.
What he was saying about the McGuigans, it wasn't flattering. But I will say, Shane McGuigan for me is the best trainer in the country. I don't think anyone's close to him. And Barry, the way he moved along Josh Taylor and the way he moved along Carl Frampton, he doesn't get enough credit for it. Josh Taylor was matched perfectly and was ready for everything that he ended up facing. He's gone downhill, Josh Taylor. He's lost some fights now. He's perhaps not the same fighter he was. But the way he was matched to get him ready for a world title, I think, was absolutely perfect.
And interesting, both those guys after the
they do, I think they get
weren't
it.
Ever they quite the same themselves. Or as good after they weren't with McGuigan. The whether that's coincidence and age or not, I don't know.
It's true. Yeah, you're right, Lawrence.
I mean, I thought for a while that they were maybe.
That's gone all quiet, hasn't it, Lawrence?
Lining up the Reactor fight or something, maybe, for him. But, I mean, because Cruiserweight is a division that's sort of threatening to catch fire and then not quite. But Jai Opate looked good the other week, and he's an exciting one. So now he's over his injury, I'd hope to see him fighting more regularly. But, yeah, you were talking about Boxer before, and I don't think they quite... The early days, I was quite optimistic. I don't know whether it's budgets, but there's not quite enough shows, their fighters aren't quite active enough. I don't know what it is, but they've got a lot of those cruiserweights and they've not quite pulled the matches off.
Do you know what's interesting? Yeah. It's interesting. You've got Matrim and Eddie Hearn and... I've said this a lot of times. Eddie Hearn is very good at promoting Eddie Hearn. Everybody knows who he is. He did a piece in the Telegraph or whatever it was saying, you know, five most famous people in British boxing. I'm in the top three. He's probably right, but that's no good. No one's buying a ticket to watch you, Eddie. They're just not, right? They're not. But Sky have gone from one extreme, this guy that promotes himself over everything else, to another extreme. I mean, Ben Shalom, who seems like a nice guy, but he's not a promoter in the classic sense. He's not a Don King. He's not a classic type of personality in terms of promotion.
Yeah, I think
that makes sense.
I think Shalom's got he could promote better in terms of the media and interviews and that type of stuff. But you're right. He doesn't exude charisma. And Boxer just seem a little bit to be treading water at the moment. But we'll see. We'll see.
They need to do something big, I think. They've got Sky backing, Premier League football attached to it. They've got to try and do something, sign somebody, do something to move the needle. Because right now, a lot of this stuff doesn't move the needle outside of kind of boxing fans. Anyway, it's quite late. So
amazing. Great to talk to you, mate. Great to be back on the show. And hopefully we'll do it again soon.
Let us know when the article's out and I'll make sure we give it
a look again.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Sports Social Podcast Network.